This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. At a news conference earlier today, President Bush said that the United States will not attack North Korea, but when he was asked if he was willing to live with a nuclear North Korea, he said no. The president declined to draw any red lines, events that would trigger a military response, and repeatedly reaffirmed the U.S. commitment to diplomacy. The U.S. continues to press for punitive sanctions at the United Nations Security Council, but it's not yet clear how far Russia and, in particular, China are willing to go. Japan imposed economic sanctions of its own earlier today. U.N. Secretary General Kofi Annan described North Korea's presumed nuclear weapons test as unacceptable today and called for direct negotiations between the United States and North Korea. President Bush says he's willing, but only in the context of the currently stalled six-party talks that also involve South Korea, Japan, Russia, and China. Amidst the cacophony, there is at least one thing that almost everyone agrees on. The regime of Kim Jong-il is brutal, dangerous, and unstable. Should the goal be to try to change that regime or to try to change its behavior? Later in the program, NPR's Mara Liasson joins us in our Political Junkie segment. We'll focus on the Senate races in Virginia and Tennessee. The candidates held debates in both those states in the past few days. If you have questions on those races or on other campaigns, less than a month now before Election Day, you can send questions by email now. The address is talk@npr.org. But first, changing or modifying a bad regime. Recent experience is not encouraging, but there can also be few doubts about the danger of nuclear weapons in North Korea. If you want to join the conversation, our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. Our first guest is Joseph Nye, University Distinguished Service Professor at Harvard University and the author, most recently, of The Power Game, a Washington novel. He's with us today from his office in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Good to speak with you.
Nice to join you.
The U.S. was exploring the possibility of regime change in North Korea as far back as the early 1990s. What's prevented the United States from doing that?
Well, it's a tough nut to crack. The North Korean regime is the last of the old Stalinist leftovers from the Cold War. For example, when I was chairing the National Intelligence Council, we had many estimates of what were the prospects of getting rid of the Kim regime. It turned out that we were overly optimistic. For one thing, it's very hard to get the intelligence agents into Korea, and it's also hard to keep them alive. It's a totalitarian system.
The regime is often described as tottering, its people starving in dire poverty. There's great concern, particularly in South Korea and in China, that it might collapse and there'd be a flood of refugees, an awkward situation. It's terrible, but is that worse than a nuclear-armed North Korea?
Well, one of the things that's amazing is that Kim Jong-il has been able to preserve his power and the structure of power while part of his population is starved. He has them under his thumb. From the point of view of the Chinese and the South Koreans, the only thing worse than that is a total collapse, which would send floods of refugees across their borders. The South Koreans think it would collapse their economy, and the Chinese fear it would bring either dangers to their own domestic situation or bring American or South Korean troops up to their border. So in that sense, those are the worst outcomes from the point of view of the South Koreans and the Chinese.
The situation, though, of a nuclear-armed North Korea, still poverty-stricken, it's in the past sold missile technology to places like Pakistan and places like Iran.
The North Korean regime has proven willing to sell all kinds of nasty things, whether it be drugs or counterfeit American dollars or missile technology. One of the things I think is essential for us to do now is to make clear that any leakage of nuclear materials out of North Korea will be a casus belli for the United States. We just cannot let this fall into the hands of terrorists.
And in the Security Council, the United States is arguing strenuously for sanctions that include the right to inspect every ship that enters North Korean waters. Certainly North Korea would take that as a very provocative act.
Yes, and it's not clear that it'll do the trick. After all, if you want to fly out a plutonium, you can fly it out in a canister that can go in a cargo aircraft, and those cargo aircraft would cross China. So it would depend not on a sea blockade. It would depend upon the Chinese being willing to intercept air cargoes.
We want your input on this conversation. If you'd like to join us in this discussion of goals regarding North Korea, is the idea that we need to change the regime to try to modify its behavior or try to contain it somehow, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. And Jason joins us. Jason calling from Reading, Pennsylvania.
Hello. I just wanted to comment that I think it's relatively obvious that we have to have a regime change. This is nothing new, like the speaker just said. They'll do pretty much anything for money. And if that's threatened us with nuclear action to force us to give them more money or develop that technology to sell to get money, they'll do it. This is no different than when they agreed to cease their nuclear ambitions for food and money in the last few decades, and they accepted the money and aid and continued to develop their nuclear ambitions. So, you know, this proves that any agreement we make with this regime is worthless.
He's got a point. President Bush was talking earlier today, Joseph Nye, of this regime that broke an agreement it made with the Clinton administration and then broke another agreement made just last September with the six-party talks.
This is about as nasty a regime as you can get. And the Bush administration, in its first term in particular, put regime change as the solution to the problem. But notice that it's 6 years later and nothing's happened. One of the things that we have to realize is that, unfortunately, we have to talk with our enemies. And by failing to at the same time bargain as well as trying to set containment around North Korea, we may have missed some opportunities. So sure, we'd all love to see regime change solve the problem, but you have to face up to the fact that we've been predicting regime change for a long time, and if it doesn't happen, then what are we supposed to do?
Jason, thanks very much for the question. And let's bring another voice into the conversation. North Korea's nuclear test was a jarring wake-up call for South Korea. That country realizes that its so-called sunshine policy, engagement with North Korea, may not be yielding the results it wanted in modifying its behavior of its hostile neighbor. Joining us is Ambassador Thomas Hubbard, former U.S. ambassador to South Korea, currently senior advisor to the law firm of Akin Gump, who's here in Washington, D.C., and he's been kind enough to join us here in Studio 3A. Nice to have you on the program.
Good to be
Mr.
with you.
Ambassador. South Korea has, up till now, been focused on trying to modify North Korea's behavior by playing nice, making economic agreements, trying to develop North Korea. And this has to be seen as a slap in the face, doesn't it?
Well, certainly it is a jarring event for the South Koreans who have, I think, put most of their effort behind a policy of engagement with North Korea, a policy of engagement which I think has been designed to lead to the transformation of the North Korean regime, lead over time to a North Korea that could be more easily merged with South Korea. Their biggest concern, I think, is they obviously are quite concerned about nuclear weapons, but they're perhaps even more concerned about the prospects of disorder in North Korea, the kinds of effects that Dr. Nye just mentioned, tremendous flows of refugees across the border. So I think the South Koreans will support efforts at the UN and elsewhere to inflict some consequences, some punitive measures against North Korea, but they will want to continue to keep the door open. They will, probably curtail their engagement, but they will continue to hope that diplomacy and engagement will be the way to eventual unification of the peninsula.
They've already suspended, as I understand it, some shipments of
that's correct.
Of
I think they were preparing some shipments of cement and other things that they have suspended.
Yet, once they resume those shipments, wouldn't that be seen as, well, it's okay, here's a reward?
Well, I don't know that they would resume it until we have some further steps. I think their hope, as our hope is, I think, is that a combination of pressure and continued diplomatic efforts by China, the United States, Korea, will eventually get the North Koreans back to the table where we can begin the work through the six-party talks to implement the declaration of a year ago that in which North Korea agreed that it would forego its nuclear weapons. I note that in various statements today, the North Koreans have not foregone that possibility. They've indicated their objective is to get back to the talks. But a key objective for the North Koreans, I think, is some form of direct engagement with the United States.
Let's get another caller in. This is Lee. Lee calling us from Spooner, Wisconsin.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I really think that we probably ought to let the South Koreans take the lead on this. if there's a mistake made, they're the ones that are really going to have to pay big time. If we make a mistake and start a war there, those people are going to really have a bad time.
South Korea certainly on the front line, though, as we heard earlier from Joseph Nye, so is China. But Ambassador Hubbard, South Korea certainly sees itself.
Well, certainly they are on the front line, that they are going to be the immediate victims of any disorder that occurs on the Korean Peninsula, and therefore very concerned about it. But I would have to say the entire world is on the front line. Our biggest concern, as has been indicated earlier, is that North Korea might somehow transfer its nuclear material, its nuclear technology or weapons to another terrorist state or a terrorist group. And in that sense, the entire world is on the front line, and we all have to be concerned about it. But we do need to keep always in mind that this is the Korean Peninsula, that the people most involved are the Koreans themselves, and certainly we need to listen carefully to their views and interests as we go forward.
And Joseph Nye, we just have a few seconds before we have to go to a break, but it's worth reminding, you're a book about soft power, but North Korea has a lot of hard power, artillery tubes and rockets aimed at Seoul just 30 miles across the DMZ.
That's right. I mean, basically, this is going to be primarily a hard power issue. I agree with my friend Tom that we have to take the South Korean views into account, but the country that has the most leverage is China. If you have something like 60 or 70% of food and oil passing through China, it's the hard power of sanctions, if China were willing to apply them, which would have the greatest leverage.
Lee, thanks very much for the call. We're talking about the U.S. response to North Korea's apparent nuclear test this past weekend, and we're taking your calls, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. We'll be back after the break. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking today about North Korea, given their reported nuclear test. Should the goal now be to change the regime of Kim Jong-il or to try again to change its behavior? And the obvious question, how and when? You can read about some of the implications of the crisis for China, Japan, and other key players, including the United States, at npr.org. Our guests are Joseph Nye. He served as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Affairs and was chair of the National Intelligence Council. Also with us, Ambassador Thomas Hubbard, former U.S. Ambassador to South Korea from 2001 to 2004. You're, of course, welcome to join us. If you have questions about the nuclear crisis, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. Let's go to J.D. J.D.'s calling us from Augusta, Georgia.
Hi. Yes, what I wanted to say about the North Korean incident is that I believe that it's almost too late to change the regime in North Korea. I think that the Bush administration, you know, they're harking on diplomacy. Well, I think it's a little too late for diplomacy, especially if they have nuclear weapons. If we try to do diplomacy, that's really our only option left, because we cannot attack them, because if we do, if they have nuclear technology, they will either attack us or our allies.
That raises the question, and again, Joseph Nye, I'm not sure you or really anybody else knows the answer to this question, unless you're in Pyongyang, but does North Korea have usable nuclear weapons now?
I doubt that they have usable nuclear weapons. Everything we've seen from the test looks like it was a fizzle. In other words, they were looking for a bigger explosion and got a smaller one. That still leaves it extremely dangerous. But the ability of the North Koreans to deter us and the South Koreans doesn't rest on nuclear weapons. It rests on the fact that they have something like 12 or 13,000 artillery tubes dug in tunnels in the demilitarized zone. And all they need to do is drop a few shells on Seoul and the South Korean stock market will collapse. So there's a lot of deterrent capability in North Korea's conventional position, and we don't have very good military options. If we'd had them, I suspect we might have used them, but we don't have them.
J.D., thanks very much.
Thank you.
And let me ask you, Ambassador Hubbard, certainly the South Koreans, with whom you've had many contacts, have considered this question. They've thought long and hard about how this is going to resolve itself. They see a regime that is brutal, dictatorial, ugly regime, as we've said earlier on. Yet, how do they change it? How do they foresee this change happening in the least bad way.
Well, I think South Korean policy for many, many years was actually sought a regime change. But I think they have drawn the same conclusion that we have now, that a regime change we can't force a regime change unless all of us are ready to stand together and really deprive North Korea of all resources, all the means they need to survive.
If China cuts off the food,
that would have terrible consequences for the North Korean people, and certainly terrible consequences for order on the Korean Peninsula. So, I think the South Koreans have concluded that they should try to live with this regime while working over time to transform it. Now, this nuclear test has brought new urgency to this issue, and I think has forced the South Koreans to reconsider their timetable, reconsider their mix of policy. I think they will continue to support engagement, but I think it will be curtailed, as we have already seen in the last few days. And I think the South Koreans now are prepared to support some form of punitive action include a little more pressure, or much more pressure, in their mix of policies designed to get the North Koreans back to an international negotiating table.
Let's get another caller in. Ken. Ken's with us from Plainfield, New Jersey.
I'm just wondering, President Bush, in his address this morning to the press, spoke about all of the UN resolutions that had been passed as far as Iraq was concerned. Now, dealing with the situation in North Korea, do you feel that type of process should go on again? And if not, do you think that President Bush would be wrong to make some type of unilateral action?
Joseph Nye, what do you think?
Well, the question is, what kind of unilateral action could he take? If he tries unilateral sanctions, it won't make much difference because we're pretty much all sanctioned out already, and it's really the Chinese who hold the big levers there. So working with the Chinese in the UN and getting a Security Council sanction, which others would have to obey, would be the by far the more practical approach.
Just let me insert, by that others would have to obey, you're talking about Chapter 7 of the UN Charter.
Chapter 7 sanctions, if it's a resolution under Chapter 6, it's less compulsory, but it would still have a certain amount of legitimacy and would be better than the U.S. trying to do it alone. If we do it alone, essentially others may not follow, and then it doesn't have any effect. And as for a unilateral military action, as I mentioned earlier, it's not clear that we have much of an option there.
Is blockade an option they're talking about inspecting these cargoes coming in and out, as I understand it, as you pointed out, you can fly plutonium out, and we don't search ships so well coming into this country.
That's right. I think the Proliferation Security Initiative, which gives us, for the countries that have signed up to it, gives us the right to stop ships and inspect their cargoes, can play some role. Makes it harder for them to export bulky things like missiles and so forth. And having that reinforced by a UN resolution would help, but it wouldn't solve the problem of smuggling out plutonium. Mm.
Ken, thank you.
Thank you.
We have been talking about the centrality of China in this context, and joining us now to talk about that is Jin Dong-yuan, Research Director for the East Asia Nonproliferation Program at the Center for Nonproliferation Studies at the Monterey Institute of International Studies. And he joins us from his office in Monterey, California. Good of you to be with us today.
Hello, Neil.
And many analysts say, and we heard again today, if you want to exert pressure on Kim Jong-il, China holds the keys.
Well, to some extent, certainly China has the largest amount of trade and energy supplies to North Korea over the last few years. But China is facing a dilemma here. If China cuts off food and energy supplies, I don't think China would think that it will stop Kim Jong-il from developing nuclear weapons. But in the meantime, China has to face a lot of problems, refugee flows and maybe internal strife or civil war. So that is not an ideal situation for China. So what China has been proposing to do is certainly the UN Security Council must adopt certain punitive actions, but they must be selective and appropriate, as the Chinese ambassador puts it, but certainly not in terms of humanitarian and food aid.
China was, of course, Korea's ally in the war against, well, the United Nations and the United States in the early 1950s. Yet it's been a long time since China really... Well, let me ask you, does China still regard North Korea as an ally?
No, I don't think China regards North Korea as an ally in the traditional sense of military alliance, because China affirms that it does not form alliance with other countries. So China regards North Korea as a friendly country.
A friendly country?
Well, it's a neighbor and that China wants to live peacefully with.
Has China looked into the possibilities of trying to foment a regime change in a destabilized country on its border that it as you say, sees as dangerous?
I don't think China would favor a regime change. What China has done over the last few years, I would say even longer than that, is try to convince the North Korean government to introduce some level of economic reforms to address some of the economic problems. So over the longer term, that the regime's behavior will be modified and there might be some change internally, as China has experienced.
So they're like South Korea in a way. It's waiting and hoping.
Right.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Mike, and Mike's with us from Brighton, Michigan.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I would like to say that no matter what the outcome is on the Korean Peninsula, the United States will be blamed for it in one fashion or another. I think the wise course here would be, A, not to take the bait that's being offered to us and say to China, gee, you know, we're really powerless in this. It's in your hands and it's an Asian problem. We can't help.
Yet there are still, I think, 25, 30,000 U.S. troops in South Korea.
I was one of those troops, and I've been advocating getting them out for years.
So withdraw American forces from South Korea. Do you withdraw the American security guarantee to South Korea?
Absolutely. I think, again, one man, one man's opinion. Charles de Gaulle said it very well when he said nations don't have friends. They only have interests. And it's not in our interest, and it's not wise for us to try to guarantee freedom for the rest of the world.
Ambassador Hubbard, how would that, what would reaction to that be like in South Korea?
Well, I'm afraid I disagree with the caller. I think that the continuance, the continued firm alliance between the United States and South Korea continues to be in the U.S. interest. South Korea has grown over the last 50 years from a near basket case to be the 10th largest economy in the world. South Korea is beginning to be a major player on the global scene. The South Korean foreign minister has just been selected to be Secretary General of the UN. South Korea remains a very important host for our forces that are in the region for general stability in the Northeast Asia region. They're in Japan as well, of course. I think it continues to be very much in our interest to preserve democracy and freedom and the economic and political success that we have helped to create in South Korea. I don't think reneging on our alliance with South Korea would in any way lessen the danger from North Korea. I think it would actually increase that.
Joseph Nye, I know we've got to let you go. You have another appointment. But before you do, obviously, we have security guarantees in Japan as well.
Well, I have to teach a class, and that's sacrosanct. But yes, I think I agree with what Tom Hubbard said, and I think you put it in a broader context, which is the United States is a key player in East Asia. We want stability in the region, and we can't just turn it over to China. Japan is counting on us, and if we're trying to make sure that Japan doesn't feel it has to go nuclear, the American presence is crucial there. There's also the fact that we've got Iran coming down the pike in the Middle East. If the North Koreans get away without any sanctioning for what they've done with their nuclear test, having violated the Non-Proliferation Treaty, the Iranians are going to read that loud and clear. So I think we have to work with China to try to get some serious sanctions through a UN resolution for the wider reasons that are broader than just South Korea.
Joseph Nye, thanks very much. Your students will get the benefits that we will be denied.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Appreciate your time today. Bye. Joseph Nye, University Distinguished Service Professor at Harvard University. And very briefly, Jingdong Yuan, at one point, one of China's very fondest wishes would have been to have U.S. forces leave South Korea.
Well, I think that's only a public rhetoric that China does not endorse foreign troops in other countries. But I think China does not oppose U.S. Military presence and certainly does not wish the U.S. withdraw its military presence right away, because that presence does provide some stability there. But on the other hand, that presence also poses a serious security threat to North Korea, given its relative weakness and deteriorating situation. So the Chinese often mention North Korean security concerns should be considered. I think that is in that context that China often makes that reference.
We're talking about the crisis with North Korea, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Ted on the line. Ted's calling us from Arlington in Virginia.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you fine.
I think we should stop fooling ourselves that China is probably complicit in North Korea's aim to acquire nuclear weapons. I think China has some degree of control over North Korea to the extent that they sort of help formulate policy. And I believe that the United States is going to have to learn to live with a nuclear power in the Far East that they don't particularly like, possibly in Iran also. And I think we have to learn to accept that fact, because the United States has nuclear weapons, and we're going to other nations are threatened by the fact that we have them. And the president, I mean, I think he caused us the problem by referring to North Korea and Iran as evil empires. And
axis of evil, I think, is what you're thinking of.
Axis of evil. And I think these people feel threatened, and they're going to try to protect themselves. And the president is hurting us by making these statements, and you're hurting us by calling these countries people who can't be trusted and all that sort of thing. We have to deal with these people. We have to learn how to live with them and trade with them. And this way we can have some sort of dialogue. Otherwise, the only other option is nuclear war. Thank you.
Ted, thanks for the call. Briefly, Ambassador Hubbard, Chinese influence and control in Pyongyang?
Right. I don't think for a minute that Chinese can control Pyongyang. The Chinese always say, well, we don't have much influence. That may be true. They were unable to stop the North Koreans from testing missiles, unable to stop them from testing nuclear weapons. But I think the Chinese do have leverage in the fuel and food supplies, the trade that they carry on with North Korea. And the question is, to what degree are the Chinese willing to risk disorder on the peninsula by bringing that leverage into play? And I think the jury is still out on that. I agree with the caller that the United States needs to find a way to conduct a meaningful dialogue with countries like North Korea and perhaps others in the Middle East. We need to be able to use all of our instruments of foreign policy in an effort to prevent them from going further down this nuclear trail. A North Korea with nuclear weapons is not something the world should have to live with. We should not accept it, but we should use every means possible to prevent that from happening.
And briefly, we just have a few seconds left for you, Jingdong Yuan, but is China willing to risk more disturbances on its border at this point in return, if that means imposing sanctions on North Korea?
I think China will accept some limited sanctions, but not the sanction that will deeply destabilize the regime and causing a lot of problems.
Jingdong Yuan, thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Jin Dong-Yuan, Research Director of the East Asia Nonproliferation Program at the Center for Nonproliferation Studies at the Monterey Institute of International Studies. He joined us today from his office in Monterey, California. Ambassador Thomas Hubbard formerly served as U.S. Ambassador to South Korea, presently Senior Advisor to the law firm of Akin Gump, and he joined us here today in Studio 3A. Ambassador, thanks very much for your
time.
Thank
you very much for having me.
When we come back from a short break, our weekly fix of the political junkie, guest junkie Mara Liasson joins us on critical debates in Senate races in Tennessee and Virginia. If you'd like to join the conversation on those races or other campaigns, less than a month before Election Day, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.